Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
Well, we are still here at the 2025 National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and we have a great friend of the ICEJ here with us this week. He spoke this morning at the Israel Breakfast, and I am so pleased that he was able to come by, spend a few minutes with us to share his story with you. This is Ilan Isaacson. He is the security chief for the Eshkol region, which is right next to the border of Gaza. And he was right in the midst of the terrible attack on October the 7th, 2023. And so we just thank you so much for stopping by and spending a few minutes with our audience to share your story.
My pleasure.
So, Ilan, I know it's very painful memories. And I know you've told the story many times, and it's probably getting a little old. You hate remembering the pain of that day. But if you could please just walk us through what happened on October the 7th. Let's start first with what your job is as the security chief there.
So first of all, thank you for inviting me. And as security officer, there are 256 areas that have security officers in Israel. It's divided in 256. But most of them, I think 99%, I don't even know what they are doing. It's very, very different. If you're living on the border, especially Judea and Samaria, on the Lebanese border and the Gaza border. So my main job, how I see it, is really to connect the army and the police and all the other units that are helping us daily, emergency units like the firefighters. And it's very different to the system in America, that under a mayor, the mayor, let's say New York, will have his own firefighters, he'll have his own police, he'll have his own rescue, search and rescue. In Israel, it's not like that. In Israel, it's all controlled by the government. So the firefighters is under the Minister of Police. The police are under the Minister of Police. So in rural areas like Eshkol or like the Gaza envelope, we don't have too many of them. And so we have a lot of volunteers. Of course, cooperating with the police, cooperating with the firefighters. So all that, I make sure that our connection with the army is 100%, that our connection with the police, and that I have enough volunteers, and everything to do with the volunteers is my job. So I have enough. So that's what I've been doing for years, to make sure that I have enough volunteers, medics, volunteers that work for the police, volunteers that work for the firefighters. And that's what I do mainly. And make sure that the army's training my first response team to get ready for, I won't say to get ready for the 7th of October, because we weren't really ready enough, but similar.
And so the Eshkol region is the largest region down by the Gaza border.
Yes.
And you have how many communities?
We have 32 communities.
32 communities.
Kibbutzim and Mushavim. Out of the 66 communities of the Gaza envelope and the town of Sderot.
So you have about half of the communities.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's how many residents, how many people?
17,500.
17,000, okay. All right.
So most of my time is training and getting ready. Yes, I have to admit, we didn't get ready for what happened on the 7th of the 10th, because I think no one, unfortunately, not us, not the army, not the police, not the government, no one thought that something like this will happen. So of course we got ready, we train, I train with the army all the time and learn the threats. And we were still surprised. And I think that the reason that we were surprised is first, on our behalf, that we're arrogant, that we become too much westernized, and that we forgot how our enemy thinks, the Arab world, and that we put too much effort in wanting peace, and that we are under pressure by the civil countries, the Western countries like Europe, like the United States. It's changed, but I'm talking previous to the 7th of the 10th.
Right, but that's a great point, because here in the West, in America, Europe, we think everybody's like us. We're peace-loving people. We're educated. We are democratic. We believe in freedoms. And so we, you know, we can live peacefully. Switzerland can live peacefully with Germany and France, and because that's the way we think. And we think everybody is like that. But in the Middle East, they are not. And Israel has always known that and understood it. But your comment is so interesting, that you'd become a little bit too influenced by the West, that are living in la-la land, thinking that everybody is peace-loving like us, when we have this hate-filled ideology, this jihadist Islamist ideology that is the exact opposite
exactly.
of Western values.
And I think because we are thinking like that, we became weak. And because we also thought like that, we and wanting peace, we put more effort in defense and not in offense. Instead of attacking, we are trying to build walls, build bomb shelters, and not attacking. And at the end of the day, a year, 2 years goes by, a year and 10 years goes by, and at the end of the day you have your enemy has done his work. He's prepared himself for many, many years. He knows our mentality. He knows it because he also sat in our jails. He knows how we think. He sees inside Israel the fighting, the political situation. And he says, this is the time. I'm going to catch them off guard. And that's what he did. Exactly what he did. And we were off guard and not ready.
So walk us through now. You wake up. Early morning, October the 7th, rockets start coming in. Tell us what happened.
So I left a bit earlier because I was supposed to meet my colonel a bit at 8 o'clock. He brought his son to spend the weekend with him. So I woke up very early, and I already left the house at 6:15. And as I left the house, I got to the Mushav, that is a community very close to me. The bombardment started, and I get a telephone call from the office of the colonel, saying get everyone into shelter, and that's what I did. I turn around, go home, get dressed in my military uniform, because usually in these escalations, I'm automatically recruited to the army. So I get in my uniform and I get another phone call from the colonel's office saying, get all your first response teams out. We've been attacked and we need your response to defend the communities. So the first question I asked, the first and only question I asked, I said, where? Because I knew one day we'll be attacked. But I thought it would be in one or two places. And the answer was, everywhere. Now, if I didn't know the colonel, I would have started maybe arguing and trying to talk to him and trying to understand. But because I knew him, I said, okay. And at 6:43 in the morning, I already sent a message to all my officers in the 32 communities saying, get out and fight. There's been a ground attack. Not really knowing what is happening. And then I took my car. Automatically, I go to my colonel. I swapped the car and I went into my armored car. And at that time, I'm already getting from a Motorola like this that a year before I got from the ICAG, a couple, I know them well, from Switzerland. And I told them I need this new communication because my communication with my communities is not that good. And that's what I bought, this communication. I was the only person in Israel that knew what was happening, more or less, because I didn't know everything, but more or less what was happening in the community because of this instrument. And that's even why I come to America with this instrument, because I can talk to all my security officers as a Motorola.
Just, from America?
Yes. Yes. I speak to them like this.
So, all right, let's back up. So the communication systems of the army and of the whole local area was down.
Yes, it was down. Our phones weren't working. The communication from the army was not so good, not so efficient. So the only real communication that I had with all my 32 officers from the 32 communities was from this Motorola. There's many Motorolas, but it's a special type that I got from you guys.
From the International Christian Embassy,
yes.
Jerusalem. And it saved a lot of lives.
It saved a lot of lives because, first of all, I knew what was happening. And second of all, around 8:30, 8:45, because I knew things that was happening, I was sending military units to the different communities because I knew what was happening.
And even the military was relying on you.
Yes.
Because you knew what was happening.
Yes, they were talking to me and asking me, first of all, what the situation is. And after they knew that I more or less knew what was happening, they would refer military units to me because I knew where to tell them to go.
And you were even directing airplanes, right?
Helicopters. Apache helicopters. Myself and my security officers were in contact with Apache pilots and in many places guided them, showing them where they have to open fire. And they killed many, many terrorists that day and saved many lives because of the communication between us.
And I've heard you tell the story that when they called you, I think about the helicopters, and you said, why are you calling me?
Yes.
And their answer was?
I said, why are you calling me? Yes, I'm in uniform. I belonged to the unit for many, many years. But I'm also the head of security of a civilian municipality. And the answer was, is more or less you're the only one that's alive. Most of the high-ranking officers from from major to lieutenant colonel to colonel were either dead or injured.
I can't imagine how you felt when you heard that.
Well, at that time, I didn't really think too much. Although the people that were killed, I knew very well, and the people that were injured, I knew very well. I've been working with them all the time. But when you're in that kind of situation, that you know what's at stake, it's actually, everything's automatic. And the more we get ready when there's no war, there's no escalation, that's how good you will respond in these kinds of situations. And I think I responded that day, and also many days after, I just put in gear automatic, and that's how I worked. So no feelings.
I wish we had hours just to go through the whole story, but by the end of the day, out of your 32 communities and all of your security officers, how many security officers had you lost?
So in the Eshkol region, in the whole region, 46 were killed. Out of the 46, 32 were my security officers. And a lot of them saved many communities. Unfortunately, they were killed. But by going out and by protecting their communities, a lot of the communities, yes, some communities were unable to help at that extent, but many of the communities, they actually saved the communities, and a lot of people were saved.
And then out of your region, how many of the hostages were taken from your region?
From Eshkol, mm-hmm. out of the 250 plus minus, 119 were from Eshkol. 254 civilians were killed in Eshkol, and that's besides the Nova party that also took place in Eshkol, and that's besides the hundreds of soldiers that were killed in Eshkol that day. So if you take Eshkol, I would say that day we are talking about around 800 to 900 people were killed in Eshkol out of the 1,200 and something.
I can't imagine the grief and the trauma just in your own heart. These are people you knew.
Yes.
You knew many, many of them on a very personal level.
And yes.
I can't imagine. How have you coped with this?
First of all, I'm not sure I've coped yet. It hasn't sunk in yet, because first of all, I'm so busy rebuilding, because my security teams were destroyed. So I'm rebuilding them, and I'm just thinking now, at least for the next year and a half to two, is only rebuilding. And so I think that's the way, more or less, I'm coping, putting my feelings aside. It might come up sometime, but at the moment, it's just getting things going.
So, well, speaking of rebuilding, I mean, you're talking about retraining and staffing your security services, but there's also a lot of rebuilding taking place now. Buildings,
yes.
Community centers, schools.
Yes.
Tell us how's that going, and what are the needs?
So first of all, what we think, to get people coming back and even to get new families, it has to be attractive, because everyone knows what happened in Eshkol and in the Gaza envelope. So we have to be better in everything. We can also say, let's not do anything and no one will live there. And that means the border is, that means the Hamas and the Islamic Jihad have won.
That they won.
They
exactly.
won. Because that's exactly what they want. So if we want to win this war, we have to rebuild. we have to, it's an agricultural area, start our farming again, build better schools, have the kindergartens that we build have to be all kindergartens that are capable of attacks by missiles, and also now we've learned by ground forces. So we have to build new facilities that are capable of handling these things.
So it'll be a kindergarten that doesn't just have a bomb shelter, it is a bomb shelter.
It is a bomb shelter.
The whole facility.
Yes, yes. In our area, very different to other areas in Israel, the whole school or the whole kindergarten is a bomb shelter. Now also the doors have to be doors that you can't penetrate and you can't shoot and the bullets will go through.
Yes, that's
it's
right.
It's much more sophisticated.
Yes, because before the safe rooms in the homes were
exactly.
just for missiles, for rockets. It wasn't about actually personal safety from intruders. So now
exactly.
they have to be completely redesigned.
So the concept has to change. And that's why we have to be better and also build, unfortunately, a lot of resilient areas. If before the 7th of October, we had 15 social workers. At the moment, we have 400.
Oh, my goodness.
So everything has changed. And it's a lot of effort to rebuild. Also, small different schools that also ICJ is helping. There's a school and agricultural school in one of the communities, and that's where you're also helping, trying to bring youngsters the age of 16, 17, 18 from different parts of Israel to our area. Because what we see that if you bring the youngsters and they spend 2-3 years after the army, they would want to come back. So that's the idea.
So we'll put in the show notes for today a donation link where the listeners can donate to the rebuilding of these communities. And Ilan, I just want to thank you for taking time to share with our listeners. I promise you they'll be praying for you personally.
Thank you.
And for your well-being and your peace and for healing from any trauma or that may be tucked down inside. But we'll also be praying for your country and for better days ahead. And we're hoping that with this new Trump administration and a close working relationship with the Israeli government, that they'll be able to come up with a solution for Gaza. That you're not going to need those bomb shelter type facilities, that we can find an era of peace. But I know that Hamas has to be defeated and eradicated for that to happen.
I'm not even talking peace. I put peace aside, but I want to have a peaceful life.
Yes.
But I know my enemy is not going to go away. But more important, we're not going to go away.
That's right.
And we're going to be stronger and we're going to be everywhere. It's our land to stay for the next thousands of years.
Amen.
And especially with the support, with your support.
Yes, well, you've got it. And
thank you.
We just pray God's blessings on you and your people and your nation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.